Today's daf in Masechet Sukkah, brought to you from Eretz Chemda, Tova, or Rechava, is daf Lamed Beis, and we're holding right at the bottom over there, Niktam Rosho and Lamed Alav Lamed Beis. So the last thing we learned was that if the top of the lulav is cut off, if it's Niktam, so then it's possible. Omrevuna loshanu ela Niktam. This is only if it's literally cut off, but if it was Nizdak, it's kasher. If, however, it's just split, then it would be kosher. So split, again, what exactly split means, we'll talk about. But the pashtus is, in terms of the halacha, even though there's so many different approaches, is that what it means is the lulav is constructed, remember, with what is called a spine. And the spine has all of the vertebrae, which, so to speak, which are over here, the various leaves that come together. And then at the top of the spine, it peters out into a single double leaf. Now remember that all of the leaves of a lulav are double leaves. They look like they're single, but then when you take a look at the other end, you see that you can actually pull them apart. And as the leaf matures, the branch matures, they open up. And now they're twice the size. So that double is called a tiyomet. Tiyomet means from twins. So these two sides of the leaf are twins. So the way we understand the idea of avir nizdak is similar to the concept of nechleka tiyomet, which we'll see later on. It means that they've come open and they're no longer connected, which very often happens on the top of the lulav, which is that top leaf itself is called the tiyomet, according to most of the mefarshim. And so over there, if that leaf, if it's nistak, which would mean that most of the leaves have become separated out, so then it would be kosher. But if the top leaf, which is the one that is most visible, is actually split, then it would be pasul. That would be the way that it comes out. We'll talk about the details as we go along. Asks the Gemara, Nistak is kosher, Vatanya, Lulav Kafuf, Kavutz. And we start listing a lot of different psulim altogether, and we'll go into them one by one. So if the Lulav is hanging down, so it looks sort of like it's a hunchback, so it's Kafuf, it bends downward. Kavutz with a Kuf, Rashi understands to mean the Lashon of coats. So it's got these thorns that are sticking out of it. If it's saduk, now that seems to be the case that we said before, nistika. If it's akum, domalamaga. If it's, this is all one thing, it's bent, so it looks like a sickle. So then it would be pasul. Charut is pasul. Charut means that it's hard, it became a hard branch. Doma lecharut, but if it's only similar, meaning it's not totally hardened, then it can be bent over so that it still would look like a lulav if you tie the spreading branches to the spine, then it would be kosher. But meanwhile, it says over here that if it's saduk, that it's pasul. How do you explain that? Omer of Papa, that case is referring to where it is so split that it is ovid kihimna. So it is made like a himnak. Now, what is a himnak? A himnak is you see a little picture, most of the shas have a little picture on the side. What it means is basically it's this little, it's actually an instrument that the sofrim use to do the incisions, the srita of the parchment. So it is a split end, where the edges are split, and he runs it along the parchment, and thereby he creates, this is like in a musical notation thing, where you would have the various lines are pre-made because you've got an instrument that is open to those levels, right? So that would mean that the top leaf is not only split, but it actually is split apart, so that when you look at it, you can see that it's in two separate sections, giving you enough of a line in between that you'd be able to have writing done in a Sefer Torah with that, which is quite significant. Now we'll see that it's actually machlokas, how significant the himnak would have to be. And we'll talk about this afterwards. But first, let's get just the simple facts over here. So when the Braita is talking about that it's posel, if it's nizdak, That is that it was so nisdak that it actually is separated out into two separate parts. It looks like a little fork on top. So it's a forked top. Then we said, if it's akum, if it's curved, so it looks like a sickle, doma lamagal, or my rava. Now, when we say it's curved, what we mean is that it's curved downwards. So it looks like a hunchback. But if it's curved upwards, that is part of its natural shape. And therefore, it's kibriyatahu. Every lulav is not just flat, but is curved up a little bit as it goes towards the top. Amrav Nachman, how about if it's curved to one of the sides? You often see people love doing this. You know, they take their lulav and they want to see whether it's curved to one side or not, so they can look like they're very bekiyim in the lulav. So what would be the din there? Litzdadim is the same as if it's forward, and it would be posel. And Amri others say, however, that it would be kosher because it's as if it's la'achara. Actually, Paskin, it's posel because it's a chisaron in hoda. The Omar Rava, ha'ilulav adesolik b'chad hutza ba'amumu uposel. So if a lulav is growing all the leaves out of one side of the spine, that's how Rashi understands it, it's posel. Others learn that what it means is that the leaves are not formed as tiomets. The leaves are single leaves that can't be split into two, and they don't have that little spine on the leaf that connects the two parts of the leaf. There's also, so both of those are brought la'alacha. There's also other pshatim, but these are the two main pshatim. It's considered to be a balmum, and it would therefore be posel. So this is even worse than hadar, if you're telling me it's a balmum. Nifritzu alav. Remember we had a machlokas Rashi. It tells us about how to learn nifritzu alav at the beginning. According to Rashi, it means that you actually tore the leaves off and then reconnected them the way that you would make a broom. So Omer of Papa, nifritzu means da'avik yichufya. You made it into, as Rashi says in Escupa, Spanish for broom. So you made it literally a broom. And it's not even connected at all. Tosus learns that, no, it's connected. It's bent, and you separated the leaves so that you would be able to have more leafy area, which works better as a broom. Nifradu is the ifrad ifrudi. Whereas if it was nifrad, they're still attached to the spine, which is similar to the way that Rashi was learning. As Tosafos is learning the Nifritzu, Rashi is learning the Nifritzu, that they were still attached, or perhaps pulled the Nifritzu, some learn, means that they weren't totally torn off, but they were partially torn, so that they're hanging loose. So that is what we mean by the Nifritzu Alav, which we passed. Boy Rif Pup, how about if just the Tiyomet was Nechlika? So again, the tiomet is the, we call it the tiomet, even though all the leaves are basically tiomot. But we call this a tiomet because it's the continuation of the spine that goes upwards. And it is the main leaf that you'll see right on top of the lulav. Now, sometimes the spine will split into more than one leaf at the top. You often will have two leaves, sometimes even three leaves, that are the same level of leaf. Therefore, you can't call one of them the tiomet. But usually, if there's three, then the one in the middle is the tiomet because it go up a little higher. If there's two, it often happens that we call it a double tiomet, which is a double-double. And each one of them has this chumra, that since it is the thing that is very niker, that is what we're makbid on. So if nechlaka tiomet mahu, Toshma, the Omer of Yoshua, it should be Rabbana, it says elsewhere, Omer of Yoshua ben Levi, nitla tiomet posel, which means that if there's no tiomet, which l'chora, I mean, if there's no tiomet, it should be the same thing as if it was nechlaka, because if it was nechlaka, there's no tiomet. So if you took it off, it's the same as nechlaka. That's what we thought. Says the Gemara, of course it's not the same. Nitla, it's literally missing. So the lulav is physically missing a piece. That is posel. But nechlaka may be kosher. Or ikene amram rabbi yochanan rabbi shuban levi or amram monam. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Nechlaka Tiomet Nase Kemishin Nitla Tiomet Upasal. But actually, what he said was that a Nechlaka is considered to be the equivalent of having removed the Tiomet completely and its Pasal. Now, this, of course, is a very common situation. And the question is, to what extent we would consider it to be Pasal. So some learn it has to be, it's possible only if it actually was nechlaka till the point that it reached the shidra itself and got, the crack went all the way through to the level of the leaf that's under the level of the shidra. Now that's a big kula. Because there's a ritva who says that in the event that it's nechlaka, since the lulav is sort of shaken violently, the derech is that the split is generally going to continue on, and because of that, it's considered to be possible even with a slight amount, because as you shake your lulav, the leaf becomes weaker and weaker and continues to split downwards. So some understand this, Rav Shlomo Zalman Paskin Lahalacha, that this is only where there is a chashash that it will continue to split. But what about if you take a little bit of super glue and you put the tiyomet together again? So in that case, we would not say all the king's horses and all the king's men, but we would actually say, since it was held together before it was nifsal, you're not fixing a psul with super glue. You're simply making it kosher because it is no longer a chalukah that is going to continue because you've made it that it won't continue. And therefore, many people will take a small nechlaka tiyomet problem and simply fix it with a little bit of glue. As long as it hasn't gotten to the rove at the time that they bite. Okay, so Reb Yehuda says, and this was our raya that we thought before, that this had to do with the idea of hadar, and it turned out it didn't have to do with the idea of hadar, but that instead it was a diuk from the word kafot. But remember, before Reb Yehuda says, if the leaves have become separated, then you should tie them together. So Tanya, in the Braita, Reb Yehuda explains where he gets this from. And Reb Yehuda, Imer Mishum Rebbe Tarfe, that when the Torah says that a lulav is kapot tmarim, the way to understand that word kapot is that it's meant to be kafut, it's meant to be tied together. That is to say that it should look like it's right next up to the shidra. And therefore read that as kafut, which teaches us that im haya parut, if the leaves have started spreading away from the spine, then tie them close. So yichtefenu. And that was his marker, not because of hadar, as we said before. Omele Ravina Luravashi, why is it that we take it so for granted that the meaning of the word kapot tmarim is what we call the lulav? We call the lulav to be the very immature branch of the palm that is just coming out. It hasn't opened up yet at all. So it doesn't even look like it's leafy. That's a problem. I mean, the truth is that that is a very big problem in terms of the agricultural issue, because when you cut off lulavim, you are basically harming the ability of the palm to grow, because that's its new growth. You sit there and you take out all the lulavim from a palm, that's it. It can't grow any further. So maybe it doesn't mean that. Maybe it means to take the mature leaves. Maybe it means kapot marim, the leaves of a tamar, are those big spread out leaves that are, you know, that they use, again, we're talking about Palm Sunday, they use that for Palm Sunday, the more spread out they are, the better it is, you know. So maybe that's what it means. It should be a charuta. No, says Rav Asher, because the whole point is that we understand the word kapot marim to be kafut. And if it's hard, it's absolutely antithetical to kaput. You can't even bring it together. So instead of being kaput, it's kaput. And therefore, it's definitely possible. I knew that Barnea was going to say it. I had to get there before him. He was planning on it, and I sensed it. Come on, admit it.
The first one who said that, Pan? Truman Capote.
You can't outdo him. It doesn't matter how insane. Okay, so Ve'ina Kafut and Leka. Okay, so couldn't it mean Ufta? So an Ufta would be basically, it could mean the actual bottom of the palm. If you take a look at the bottom of the palm, that is like the trunk of other trees, you can see the old leaves are all part of that, what looks like a log on other trees. You can make out the way in which the bottom of those leaves were attached to the palm. So it goes, it has all of these like little indentations all around it, right? So why can't that mean the kapot marim? Because it's completely all one piece. That's about as kafut as you can get. No, says Rav Ashi, kafut means that it was ika parut. At least it's possible for it to be separated. You could bring it together over here. It is completely and totally one solid piece. So this is a kafut va'omed la'olam. That's not called kafut. So couldn't it be referring to a kufra? Now a kufra is a stage between what we call the lulav and what we call the charut. So the lulav takes a couple of years until it hardens into a solid piece of wood that is similar to a branch. You've seen those very, very hard branches on the palm that are towards the bottom of the growth. Then you've got, right coming out from the top, you've got those lulavim that are just, they look like just actual one piece. Those are the lulav. By the way, there's some who say that a lulav, we don't paskin this way, but there's some who say that a lulav that literally, sometimes they sell lulavim like that, that it's so young, it looks like a stick. You can't even make out that there's separate leaves unless you look very closely. That is not even called a lulav at all because you don't make out the leaves yet. But in any event, between those two stages of the freshly growing immature branch, which is the lulav, to the fully hardened mature branch, which is the charuta, is the stage of kufra. So in kufra, the lulav is opened, and you could see very beautifully the leaves have all spread apart, but you can push them back and you could tie them up. So they are still shayech to kafus. And therefore, if we darshan kapot marim as kafut, then it should be able to include even the kufra. Omer Abaye derachea darche noam v'chol netivotea shalom. Anybody who uses branches of palm for their schach will tell you that the last thing that you want to do is walk around with one of those pieces as your lulav, because they are full of splinters and thorns, and you have to be very careful handling them. Wear gloves, thick gloves. Every time you lift them up and you put them on your sukkah, you're in pain for days. Some of those thorns can be killers. And therefore, since the Torah is drachea darchei noyam, shalom, it doesn't make sense that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would tell you to do something that is so not pleasant, that should be what the Torah is giving you as a mitzvah. Can you imagine using this as a raya to the identification of what the Heftzer Shal Mitzvah is? It's impossible. But the Torah would tell you to do something unpleasant. So therefore, the Heftzer Shal Mitzvah cannot be a kufra. Pasha. Well, maybe it simply means kapot of tamarim. So it doesn't mean the kapot, meaning the branches. It means the clusters of the dates, which also grow as a cluster. And that would be, take two of those clusters of dates and wave them around for your lulav. No, but it's written as if it's kapat. There's no vav in there. So a kapat is singular. Okay, fine. So one date cluster. Excuse me, but a date cluster is never called a kapat. A date cluster is called a kaf. And lahu kaf korilez. The only thing that would be called kapat would be that branch, which we're identifying as the lulav. Tzine, remember that the word tzine is the actually Aramaic for palm. Remember Hani Tzinata de Bavel? Is it true that they're there from the days of Adam HaRishon? We had this back in Brochus. So Sinei Har HaBarzel, simply a reference to the palm trees that grow on that iron mountain. So they are kosher. So remember that the issue over there is that you've got these very short, sharp leaves that don't grow very long along the spine. And furthermore, they do not actually grow next to each other very much. There's a big gap between one leaf and the next leaf. Because of that, says Abaye, since there's a gap, and since these leaves are generally short and don't come all the way up to the top, the way the regular leaves of the lulav are quite long, so these, you have to be careful when we say that they're kosher. Now, they're not always kosher. Because only if rosho shel zeh magil et tzadikah rosho shel zeh. If the spine is exposed, then it's not kosher. You'd have to have the top of the lower leaf at least reaching the bottom of the leaf above it. But other than that, if it's ein rosho shel zeh magil et tzadikah rosho shel zeh, then the lulav would be possible. Tanya nami hachi. And we could see that from the Braita. Because the Braita says, Sinei Har HaBarzel is possible. What? But it said in the Mishnah, Va'anantanan kishera. How can the Braita contradict the Mishnah? Elosh b'amina ke'abaye. Clearly, there are two different types of Sinei Har HaBarzel. If the top of the leaf touches the bottom of the upper leaf, then it's kosher. However, the Braita is coming to warn us, just be careful, because there are times where Sinei Har HaBarzel will be puzzle. Actually, some start with the contradiction between the Braita and the Mishnah, and that was the catalyst for Abaye's explaining that there's a difference, rather than Abaye just coming and saying, Mitzad HaSfar, there's a difference, and then are bringing a Raya from the Braita. So Ika the Ramile Mirma, some use the Braita as a steerer to the Mishnah, and therefore we need to come unto Abaye to answer it. And it runs like this. Tnan, in the Mishnah it says, Sinei Har HaBarzel kosher. How do you explain the fact that in the Braita of Tanya Pesula, how does the Braita tell me it's possible? Omar Abaye, Lokashya. It's actually not a problem. There's a bit of a problem in that Gavi's video is frozen. But it's not a problem of the Braita to the Mishnah. And that's because kancha rosh hashanah magil et tzadik rosh hashanah v'kancha ein rosh hashanah magil ik rosh hashanah. So in this version, Abaye reaches his conclusion based on the stira itself. What is this actually, Tzinei Har HaBarzel? Omer of Marion, Omer of Yeshua ben Levi, some say it was Toni Rabba Bar Mori, Mishrom Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. This is a reference to those two palm trees, those two massive palm trees that are there in Gay Ben Hinnom. And that is a place where there's smoke that's coming out between these two palm trees. And that's called Gay Ben Hinnom because that's where hell is. You know, that's where that smoke pouring out of the ground is. And that's the reference to the Iron Mountain. The Iron Mountain gives you this sense of Mount Doom. And that is Zeo Sheshaninu Tzinei Har HaBarzel Ksherot. Those are the palms that grow their lulavim like that. And that place is Pitcha Shel Gehinom. That's the place where you, one of the entrances to Gehinom that we learned about back in Erevin. And I've actually had tourists ask me when we, my daughter's, a music school, it's actually right there in Gay Ben Hinnom. All the time people would say, could you direct us to the Pitcha Shel Gehinnom, please? So I figured Barnea will probably put up a big sign, you know, to get all the tourists. Maybe you could actually work out some way to press a button before and have this dark smoke coming out. It'd be a major hit, I think, huh? And nobody else has come up with that one. Whew. I mean, we're talking about millionaires here. Alrighty. So anyway, that's the Tzinei Har HaBarzel that we're referring to. Lulav sheyesh bo shlosha tefachim. I would go in with Alon in this, actually, Roberta. He's very good at the technical, and spreading the word. You'd have to split the money, but it's so much, it's probably g'day. Lulav sheyesh bo shlosha tefachim kedei lenaneya. So the pashas of the Mishnah is that if the total is three tefachim, then you have enough to be menaneh the lulav. So then it's kosher. Amar Avira Amar Shmuel. Well, it's not what it means. The shiur of the Hadas and the Harava has to be a minimum of 3 tvachim, whereas the lulav has to be 4 tvachim, because we need for the lulav to be able to stick out above the Hadas and the Harava. It has to stick out a tefach so that it should be nicker when we're waving it. Rabbi Parnach, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, that's not just the lulav, man. That's the shidrosh lulav. I mean, the branches that are an extension of the lulav can add a lot of height. We're talking about the spine itself, and the spine is the place where you have the so-called vertebrae, meaning that you have the other branches that are sticking out. So this would be a machlokas. Does it mean the alim of the lulav yotzi tefach? Does it mean the shidrosh lulav tzorach yotzi min ahadas tefach? Says the Gemara, but it doesn't say that. It says in the Mishnah, "Lulav sheyesh bo shlosha tvachim kidei lananiya bo kosher." How can you tell me that you need 4 tvachim if the Mishnah says 3 tvachim? What does that mean? Ah, what it means is that the Mishnah, the way you're reading it, should be read differently. Not sheyesh bo shlosha tvachim kidei lananiya, shlosha tvachim that will still leave kidei lananiya means plus. What has to be is that extra tefach. Now, what that extra tefach is, I mean, it maybe leaves, it maybe the actual spine, that's the machlokas. I'm not telling you what to say about that. But the way to read the Mishnah is definitely to see it as uchadei. And therefore, mar kedi itle, Shmuel will say that it means it needs an additional tefach, including its leaf area. Fine. And Rabbi Yochanan will say, no, it means an additional tefach just of the shidra, which may give you a lot more than just an additional tefach for the actual leaves. So let's take a look and see whether the Braita leaves room for Rabbi Yochanan's shot, you need the shidra. It says like this, Tashma, shiur hadas va'arava shlosha, v'lulav arba'a, marla v'hadei alin. I mean, look, the Braita is putting together, and it's not saying it the way the Mishnah said it, right? It's not saying that you need uchadei lanane. All it's saying is a straight out shiur. Now, when you're talking about the shiur of the hadas, I mean, that's the hadas in toto. You're talking about the arava. That's the arava. So then the lulav is in toto. I would assume. I mean, it must be including its leaves that come all the way up to the top. No, and that way it's the same as the others. No, says Rabbi Yochanan. That's not what it means. It means levad me'alin. Look, I mean, if you got like a big leaf on sticking out of your arava, you can't include the leaf in the arava. The arava is the branch. So just because a lulav looks like a branch, but the bottom line is that those things on top are leaves, and therefore makes perfect good sense the way I'm learning too. Okay, Gufa. Now let's take a look at that braita. Okay, the braita goes on like this: Shir adas varava shlosha v'lulav arba'a, and Rabbi Tarfon adds over there that no, at least this is what he think he means. No, you need an ama bat chamisha tvachim. You have to have 5 tvachim. For your aravas, for your hadas, oh my rava, good Lord, that's outrageous! May God forgive Rabbi Tarfon. Do you realize what this is going to do to the market for hadasim? It's a disaster. Hashta avot shlosha lo mashkechinan. We can't even find a hadas that has 3 tvachim where it's properly hadas, which we'll see is meant to be 3 little tiny leaves coming out from every knot. And they have to be coming out from the same place. And that is so difficult to find. And to find even one that's 3 tvachim is almost impossible. And now, I mean, you know what adasim cost, by God. I mean, the the set of adasim could cost something like $30 or $40 just for 3 adasim. What's going to happen if we need 5 tvachim? Like Rabbi Tarfon, we're going to start paying $500 for a bunch of hadasim? But Chamishami boy, he's telling us we need 5? Kiyot Ravdimi Omar, when Ravdimi came to Bavel, he said, you guys are misunderstanding Rabbi Tarfon. Of course Rabbi Tarfon doesn't have another shear. He's not saying you need 5 tvachim. He's telling you the size of the tvachim. You need 3 tvachim, okay? So normally 3 tvachim would be a half of an amma. So says Ravdini, all that he was saying is that the half of an amma that it's supposed to be should be, take an amma bat shisha tvachim, so measure a regular amma, six tvachim amma, turn that into a five tvachim amma, meaning add one-fifth of a part to each one of the tvachim, and then use that larger tefach, three larger tvachim. He's not coming to tell you, I mean, ad kidekach, to need five tvachim. He's telling you to use slightly larger tvachim. And then the extra amount, you have to add on to the lulav too. Okay, so fine. So then what are you saying the real meaning is, according to Rabbi Tarfon? You need three plus three-fifths, because you made every one of those tvachim an additional fifth to make up for the sixth missing tefach, right? That's what you said. So then if that's the case, we've got a contradiction between Shmuel and Shmuel. Here, Shmuel just was quoted by Rav Yehuda saying that the shir of an adas and arava is shlosha. The problem is that Rav Yehuda said that Shmuel paskin like Rabbi Tarfon. And that would mean that to say that it's shlosha is very misleading, because in actuality, it's three plus three-fifths of the normal tefach. Okay, so he was approximating, you know, low dak. It's about three tefachim. Come on, man, you can't say low dak l'kula. You're telling people it's a kosher hadas if it's three tefachim long, whereas you yourself, paskin, it's only a kosher hadas if it's three and three-fifths of a tefachim. Does it make sense to you? That's called low dak. Ema damrina low dak l'chumra. We're certainly not going to make a kula and have people be nichshal not having a kosher lulav because you didn't feel like being exact. So mi amrina low dak? Of course not. Now that can't be what it means. Ki ata Ravin, so Enochinami, when Ravin came along, he said, both of you misunderstood Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon was being makel, he was not being machmir. And what Rabbi Tarfon says is, okay, you need a half of an amma for three tvachim. But you don't need a half of a big amma of six tvachim. You need a half of an amma which was only five tvachim. So therefore, take an amma bat chamisha tvachim, split it into six tvachim, and take off the three tvachim, should be three tvachim of a smaller amma, which itself is only chamisha tvachim. So divide that into six parts. Tzei mehem, take three of those smaller tvachim to be for your hadas, and then one more to be for your lulav. Which means, according to Rabbi Tarfon, how long do we really need? We really only need a half of an amma bat chamisha tvachim, which is two and a half tvachim instead of three tvachim. So now when Shmuel said you need three tvachim, isn't it a contradiction? Because kama havilu treyu pal gets only two and a half. So how did Shmuel say that it's three? And there is where we said Shmuel was being approximate. It's two and a half, so he said three. And there he was low dak, but he was being machmir with his low dak. It's clear that he was not trying to be very meduyak, because after all, he was the one who said that halacha is like Rabbi Tarfon, meaning that you really would only need two and a half normal size tvachim. Okay, so I think it might be kedai first before we start on the hadas, on the dinim of the hadas. As we said earlier, this perek separates out each one of the various minim so that we can get the details of it. So it might be kedai for us just to review basically some of the halachas over here. Let's take this hymnic thing, because it's a very serious thing, this hymnic. Rashi even suggests, even though he leaves it open, whether it's the Alina de Shidra, that it would have to be such a break that it affected the actual Shidra. The Shulchan Aruch seems to paskin that it's only if most of the Olim are actually split like that, not just if the middle one is split. And the Ramah paskins very much lachumra that it's even if just the tiyomet, the middle one, is split. And basically, not only that, but halacha lamaisa, most of the poskim are very machmir, not only like the Ramah, but also like the Gra, that even if it's right at the very tip, and this is very common, people don't even look at it, if at the very tip it is spread apart, so it looks like a fork, instead of just lying one on the other, that it's considered to be a Na'aseh Kihimnak. And this is something that, according to the Ramah, would be possible, halacha lemaaseh, that people don't even notice. Fine. Again, because Rashi defines it as something that is the instrument used by the Sofrim, so because of that, there are others who hold, particularly in the Marsham, he holds that it has to be extremely separated, because otherwise you can't say just a tiny little separation is Kihimnak, because then it doesn't look at all like the instrument of the Sofer. Okay, Lamaisa, obviously, Kedai to try to be very careful that even if it's Nechlika, it's not Nechlika in a way that you could see it as two separate leaves. Next thing we had was Nechlika Tiyomet. So, as we mentioned, we said Nechlika Tiyomet, the Gemara ended up saying, is Na'aseh Kemi She Nitla Tiyomet, and it's possible. So here too is a Machlokas. Does this mean Nechlika most of each of the Tiyomet, so that most of the leaves have a split? And some say it means even Nechlak, the middle leaf, which is a very big problem, because we just got finished saying that it's only possible in the middle leaf if it's not Sekihimnak. And now you're trying to tell me that even the middle leaf alone is called Nechlak Atiyomet. So the Ritva says that here it's talking about, there's really no difference, and that here it's talking about Nechlak Rubo. Whereas before, when we said Nistak, that really meant Miyuto. But Be'ikar, it's really the same idea. And because of that, the Ritva is the one who suggests that you have to be careful, even if it's not yet Nechlak to such an extent, because his Loshen is Balei Nefesh, or B'chayshesh, that as you shake your lulav, it's going to be spreading. And therefore, we should consider it to be possible. Here's where I told you about Rav Shlomo Zalman, that you should put a little bit of glue on it before it reaches that stage, and therefore it won't become pasul. There's also then the next halacha, which was the issue of the shear of the lulav. It's fascinating. There's two separate issues, because Rashi says, the Gemara says, in order that should be kedei l'naneya. Rashi says that the lulav, because the lulav is the highest min, but there are chateva, it's a big tree, and the other ones are bushes. So because of that, we want the lulav to be more tree-like so that we can stress the difference between the minim. That despite the fact that the Gemara says that the reason it has to stick out is a kedei l'naneya. So apparently they're two completely different issues. The sticking out and the heker of what needs to stick out, the sufficient shear kedei l'naneya maybe. Or the Rambam says a very strange pirush in the Pirush HaMishnayos. He says that you need to have that extra tefach to be able to hold the lulav in order to shake it. Mashbari, he understands there's two completely different timing. One about the size of the lulav and the chashivas of the lulav. And the other one is, kedei l'naneya, like the Rambam, is kedei l'achzikbo. So you need it to be able, you usually will hold only the lulav, and the other things are tied to the lulav above it. So then that will mean that the lulav is lower. So you need an extra tefach, so that even when you put a lulav down to be able to hold it, to shake it, it will not be lower. That's a completely different approach. According to the approach that we're taking, especially the way Rashi is learning, and this is mashma from the Ran to be the truth, that if, let's say, you have very long aravas, which often happen, that people have long aravas, they grow very long. So in that case, your lulav would still need to be an extra tefach above the aravas. So that often happens. People are not makpid, but they take, okay, this is a lulav that's kosher because it's four tefachim. I don't need more than that, but it's not true. Because if you end up with your aravas being longer, then you won't have a lulav that's sticking out. And apparently, certainly, the Ran is makpid on that. There are other shitas halacha that hold that that is a problem. So the question of Ovais, what the shear of Ovais is, that we don't find even today, the mashma'ut here is that he was complaining, Shora Lemori, because you absolutely need a vote in the entire shear of Shloi Shetvachim. The question is, do you really, or is Rubo kosher? I mean, we end up paskening that it's kosher, but you should know that the sheet of the Ga'enim that the Tur brings is that it would be possible even b'di'evet if it isn't three tvachim of three leaves, which is very difficult to find. Those are only the olives. They have over here A plus, A plus plus, and A plus plus plus, which are the different ways that you could buy your hadassim. You cannot rely, even on the plus plus, you cannot rely that the whole thing is mishulash. You have to go over it. What I do is I usually buy like two or three of the plus pluses, and that way out of all of the boxes, you can find three to be yotzei the shita of the gainim, that it would be possible. Now, what is wonderful is the sheet of the Bala Itur. The Bala Itur holds that a hadas only needs one knot that has three leaves coming out the same place, which is marvelous. Although I must warn you, plain hadasim, normal hadasim, do not grow in this way. The normal hadas is the hadas sheita, as we'll see later on in the Gemara. The hadas sheita does not grow with even two very often coming out of the same knot. And that is not kosher. And as a matter of fact, the only way that you actually, in practical terms, can get a hadasa that is three tvachim long, that is mishulash the whole way, is you have to burn the hadasim down to the ground first. It's the craziest thing. But the growers of the hadassim explained this to me. I said, I don't understand. I've never seen one that is mishulash. It's always hadas sheita. And apparently you start with a hadas that doesn't have the mishulash, and you burn it, sometimes several times, and then it keeps, I guess for some reason, response of the plant to the damage is that when it grows with more protected leaves. And then it is the shear that you need. Just fascinating, just in terms of the actual agriculture of it. Okay, anyway, that's the Kitzur Halachas on this issue. And now we're ready for our dear Capitan. If he can come with us. We don't see you, Capitan. Give us the treat.
I'm driving into Helsinki for a minion. Second minion of the summer.
Oh my gosh, a Rosh Chodesh minion. Okay, fine.
A Rosh Chodesh minion. It's hard to get tattoos together in Finland.
Yeah, I know.
And I got to do my duty, so I'm doing it from the car.
Beautiful, beautiful. I must say, Rabbanei, I did appreciate your pun, but we already had the Mishnah. Hadas ha-gazul v'hayavesh pasul. So moving on now to the hadasim. So if a hadasim is stolen, we have the same issue because of the fact that it says v'kachtem lechem, and it lists the all of the four meaning. So if it is yavesh, it's also pasul. Again, b'pashtus, yavesh would be a problem because of hadar. But it might not be because of hadar. This we saw was the machlokas. And therefore the question is, what do we mean by dry? So if it's dry, the way Tosfos explained it, that it's so dry that it's nifracha b'tziporen, the way an ozen abachor is nifracha. So this means, that's the way the Ravid paskins, this means that it's considered to be dead. It's not just that it is a pagam of an inhodar. It's just a completely gone hadas, because the hadas, actually, the leaves are going to fall off even before they get to the level of turning white. And therefore, by the hadas, it makes sense to say that it's brittle. If the hadas comes from an asherah or an irna nidachas, it's possible. This we saw, and we're going to see again, is the k'tute michtat shiure. If it's niktam rosho, the top of the stem, we're not talking about the leaves, we'll see what the idea would be if the top leaves cover over a clipped stem. But if niktam rosho, Or if the leaves were torn off of your Nifritzo means actually torn off, then that's the way Rashi explains it, in which case it's no longer Mishulash. Or it could be, some learn that it means that it's split. They're not torn off, because if they're torn off, then you don't have the Hadas Mishulash, which we'll see in the Gemara. Or if Nifritzu Alav, so it not, does not necessarily mean, as I said, to be torn off. It could mean that they're split. Oshayanavav Merubot Mi'alav. Let's, I don't know how many of you have actually seen a Hadas with berries on it, but the Hadas tree grows these little berries. They remove them for your Lulav, because if you have more berries than you have leaves, then it's possible. If you take off the berries, imiatan kasher, the problem is that if you discover that you've got the berries on Yontev, you're not allowed to be makshet hadas on Yontev. So ein mematin biyom tov, because that would be called tikkun mona. So it would be like making a repair to a kli. So because of that, they peel them off for you before. Says the Gemara, what is a hadas? Well, the Torah never uses the word hadas. The Torah uses the word anaf eitz avot, a branch from a tree that is braided. What does that mean exactly? It means the tree she'anafav chofim et eitzo. It's anaf eitz avot, so that the eitz itself is a braid. So that means that when you're looking at the actual branch, you don't see branch. You see braided leaves, and that means that the branch has to be covered by leaves. So what branch is that? That would have to be a hadas. Oh, wait a minute. I mean, olive trees have a tremendous number of leaves, very, very close. All you see is this silvery, wavy look when you look at the olive trees. So couldn't it be an olive branch? No, because it's still not braided. You're right, there's a lot of leaves and it's covered. But remember that it also says avot, and avot means that it's braided. Okay, so maybe it means a dulba. Now, Rashi learns that a dulba is chestnuts, which Tosfos says, how can it be chestnuts if that's not the way that the chestnut branch looks? It doesn't look like it's braided. So he gives another possibility. But whatever it is, there, you shouldn't think that it's things that have just a lot of leaves or things that have braid, because it needs to both be braided and be sufficient leaves along the braid that it covers the entire wood. So be'inan anafav chofim et etzo v'leka. Okay, so then maybe it's hirduf. Hirduf is generally explained as oleander. So it could be oleander, right? Omer Abaye, no, it can't. Drachea darche noam v'leka. Oleander is not sweet and nice. It's very sharp. The leaves are sharp, and the Torah wouldn't have told us to take that. Rava says there's another pasuk that crosses out the oleander. Ha'emet v'hashalom e'avu. Love, truth, and peace. Says Rashi, oleander is neither love nor truth. I mean, is neither a truth. It's an amazing Rashi. Neither truth nor peace. Why not? Because it's poisonous. What does poisonous have to do with truth? I mean, I understand it's not, it's the peace of the dead, not the peace of the living. But what does it have to do with truth? It's a very beautiful mimer from the Bali Musa from Kelm that brings a raya from here. It's such a beautiful pshat that when people say Lashon Hara, you say, okay, so it's true, but it's usher to spread it, and therefore it's Lashon Hara. So they say, no, it's not true. That's the point. Something which is poisonous is not true either, because truth is not measured by factual truth. Truth is measured, like we see by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Mishana Mipnei HaShalom, even though his Chotemes is Emes. So why is that? Because the nature of truth is that which is kiyum, and something that is deathly can't possibly be true. It has no kiyum. So because of that, it's a mistake to say that Lashon Hara is be'etzem true. It's just that you have a bad intent at spreading it. It's be'etzem not true. It's beautiful, beautiful insight, because it connects together a number of different sugyas about the nature of truth. But for Rashi to say it's neither true nor peace, Daf could go up his way, it's not true. Why? Because it's poison. Beautiful. So anyway, we do have some issues over here, la halacha, to understand. I'm just thinking it might be good to wait till tomorrow till we see all of the various issues. So let's go a little bit further.
Israelis lo aleinu have died because they made tea from the oleander leaves.
Yes, yeah, no, I read about it all the time. People making tea from oleander. Yeah, it's amazing. Turn her up on it. Kalua kimin kliya. So what we're talking about over here, it means that it's like a braid. V'dome l'shalshelet. It looks like one of those chains that they make on necklaces, where the chain is like very intricate and it's all covered. And that the only thing like that is the hadas. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer is another issue over here. Anaf eitz avot. That means that it's the same way that we have eitz pri. Eitz pri means eitz, where tama eitz is ketama pri. So if it says eitz, anaf eitz, it must mean that the anaf, the correct girsa, probably is eitz. That's the riff. Eitz, shetam, eitz ovi anafav shaveh. That the wood and the leaves have exactly the same taste. And that's the point. So he's being medayik in the relationship of the eitz and the anaf. And usually, the wood of the tree does not taste the way that the leaves taste. Masha Inkain, when it comes to the very distinctive taste of the hadas, the wood actually has that same hadas smell and taste to it as the hadasa leaves. So that's we'll see that this is nogea the esrog, because the esrog relates to the tama eitz ki tama pri, is one of the identifications of the esrog. And it's actually quite shocking. If you eat the wood of the esrog tree, it tastes exactly like the esrog. It's amazing. Which, of course, goes back to the Inyan in Gan Eden, where the marker of death in the world was that we don't have tama eitz ketama pri. And that is why when the esrog dies, it never dies. The esrog remains ketama eitz ketama pri. It just turns into wood because it was a pri, and then it becomes like eitz, which is remarkable. All other fruit rot. The esrog doesn't rot. It turns into wood.